power opportunity is going to come when interest rates are rising. And the reason for that is because interest rates are rising and so many people bought on short-term debt, which has an adjustable rate factor or a floating factor. So the rate floats.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Finance Friday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What is going on, everyone? You know the drill. Every Friday, we're coming at you with Finance Fridays. We're sharing tips and tricks on how to get your money working for you, not only harder, but smarter. We all know it's not what you make, but what you keep. At the end of the day, that's how we're going to create the lives of our dreams and be able to create just an amazing place for not only ourselves, but those around us. And the only way to do that is to take control of your finances. And so that's what we're doing here every Friday. And I just wanted, before I get into what the topic is today, just wanted to give a shout out for those of you that have listened for a while. I've had a goal for 6 months of this year to get to 100 ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. We actually did that like beginning of May. And something happened with the podcast, I don't know, where we lost about 30 and we dropped below 70. Actually, we were just above 70 because we'd gotten a little ways over 100. And I am happy to report that we're back to triple digits. We just got 100 ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. So thank you very much. I just want to give a shout out to the latest review, which was posted by Houston Investor titled Value Added. Person goes, Sean always puts out great content. Tons of value to the listening audience. There's something for everyone from the newbie to the experienced veteran. Keep it up, Sean. Well, thank you, Houston Investor. One, I really appreciate those kind words, but also you just taking the time out of your day to leave that. And like always, the fee of the show is if you find value of the show, please, please share it with someone who you also think could get value from the show. If you haven't done so, please leave a rating and review. Both of those things are what drive the algorithm to get the show in front of more people. All right. It's a crazy world out there, people. Crazy headlines from the market doing crazy things. The stock market, the real estate market, interest rates. You know, we've recently had another rate hike and there's talks of two more, which, as we all know, that's what the Fed said at the beginning of the year. And there are definitely people out there that are saying, no, no, it's not going to happen. They're going to crash the economy. They can't do that. Well, this is where we are today, right? The market is down over 25%. We're officially into, we've had two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. We're just really into bear market territory, right? This is some type of correction, contraction, recession, whatever you want to call it. The bond market's had the worst start to a year. We're almost at the end of the year. Worst year in its history. Rates back up to what, 7% or above on a 30-year mortgage. I was talking to a local lender I know, and he mentioned that the highest he saw was about 7.25% the other day. And it was a person with excellent credit score, 20% down, solid house, solid person to be lending to, and it was 7.25%. He said the highest he's ever seen in his career was 9, I want to say, and it was somewhere over 8%. Yeah, so we're getting close to that number. And with two more hikes, it could be there. I think there's just so much going on, from super high inflation, supply chain issues, geopolitical risks, elections, all that stuff. There's so much uncertainty going on that we're just seeing the market react. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. You know, some people predict that rates will come back down next year in 2023. Recently, I've seen a respected individual say that he doesn't see it happening more closer to than to 2025. And at the end of the day, none of us have a crystal ball. So we shouldn't waste our energy on trying to predict what's going to happen. What we should be wasting our energy on is how to set ourselves up to weather the storm, whatever that may be. And so that's what some of the items I wanted to talk on today are about, that and what we can do from a personal finance perspective. Obviously, that's what Fridays are about, but also this is a real estate show as well. So kind of what I'm seeing from that landscape. Because if we just look at it, the debt, what some consider a big issue for our government, the United States government, that's like in a debt spiral, right? And the interest expense, as the Fed fund rate is increased, it costs more to pay back our federal debt, right? Because the rates are higher. So that interest expense on the debt issued pay down our, what is now a $30 trillion deficit. Think about that, $30 trillion deficit. So that expense on the debt issued to pay down that $30 trillion deficit would exceed our current tax revenue. Think about what I just said. So just the interest expense alone will exceed what the government brings in from a tax revenue standpoint. However, there's two options to combat that, other than obviously reducing our debt. We all know we won't do that, right? We have too big of an issue to do that, but or too big of a problem to do that. So one is to lower the amount of bank reserves banks must keep on hand. And this will encouraging lending and lower rates. Or you could monetize the debt, which i.e. what they've been doing is printing money, right? Stimulus. What this does is it allows you to pay back debt with cheaper dollars. And that's what they've been doing. But that the caveat to that is it also breeds inflation, right? And that's what we're trying to combat here. We're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And so what I think is going to play out is they're going to continue to increase rates until it gets to a point where inflation is reduced. Because if you look on the Fed's website, they literally say they're trying to operate at a 2% inflation rate. Well, yes, the inflation rate did lower recently, but we're still at over 8%. So we have a ways to go. And I saw a recent article that was a few economists were saying that the homeownership, so historically homeownership in the U.S., been homeownership of over 60% of the households own a home versus rent. And these economists were saying that it's probably going to dip below that for the first time in recorded history. So that would be huge, but I could see that happening because we're seeing what is happening now, where interest rates are rising a lot faster than home values are retracting, right? Yes, we're seeing some retraction, but it's nowhere near where it needs to be to even out that balance, right? So what does that mean? Well, one, your down payment to acquire the house because the values have gone up so much is really high. That makes it harder for like, instead of maybe you had to save 50 grand, now you got to save 100 grand, let's say. That's a big difference, especially in a market where cost of living is drastically going up and makes it extremely tough, right? And especially not only that's happening, but wage growth is not keeping up. And then on top of that, the interest rate's higher, so now your monthly payment is going to be greater. So you're going to still be able to qualify, but you're going to be able to qualify for less. You're going to be paying more to get less, or essentially paying the same to get way less. And so this is going to drive people to not be able to afford homes, or they're just going to make a decision, why do I want to jump into something that I'm not happy with and pay this rate? So I can see it that could happen where 60% of the people drop below that 60% mark of home ownership. It's sad, right? No one wants to see that, but that's going to drive people renting, right? And so that's kind of the topic I wanted to get into. There's a few questions that came up to me this week. One was obviously, we just saw for the first time rent growth dropped, right? There was negative month over month. And you kind of got to look at that from multiple angles. Yes, it did drop, right? That was month over month. It's still up single digits year over year. So I think it was still up 9% year over year. But what I will say is this is going to create, or what you need to do to kind of set it up to be smart to weather any storm if you're buying real estate or if you currently own real estate, is to be really smart on your projections. And you should not be buying something where the deal is heavily dependent on significant rent growth. So what I mean by that is you don't want to buy a deal that you need to get X amount of rent growth just to be able to survive. Now, I get it. You might need to get X amount of rent growth to get a certain return. Sure, that makes sense. But it shouldn't be to get X amount of rent growth just to survive, be able to pay your expenses, your debt service. And it shouldn't be reliant on you selling a certain cap rate. You shouldn't be compressing. I think you should never compress cap rates on your exit when you're underwriting. But in a time like this, you definitely should not be. You should be increasing that cap rate. And part of that conversation I had is I still don't think it's going to be a massive increase in cap rate, like a decompression in cap rates, like we've seen historically where rates rise and so do the cap rates. Not that they're like 100% correlated, but you've seen it, right? Because the cost of debt is more than it means you're going to pay less, right? And why I don't think it's going to expand as much as it may have had in the past is due to real estate becoming more and more of a a Main Street asset class. And what I mean by that is, in the past, it's always been under this bucket of alternative investment, right? So you have stock investments, bond or fixed income investments, and then you have alternative investments that are historically just haven't been mainstream. And that's for a multitude of reasons that we don't need to get into. But now you're seeing major institutions break it out even more. They still have that bucket of alternative investments, but now real estate has its own bucket. And the reason for that is because a lot of these big institutional players, whether it be pension fund, insurance company, large asset managers, what have you, these big players that need yield for their funds. Pension fund needs yield so they can pay out their pensions, right? Insurance companies need yield because they make investments to cover themselves if they have any losses in terms of people take out policies and they might need to use them, like we've recently seen in Florida with a terrible hurricane, a tough situation, right? And I hope best for everyone. But in those situations, yeah, they invest their premiums to be able to cover those losses, right? And so they're chasing yield. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, bond market is having its worst year in history. And that's traditionally where people go to get yield, bond market, right? Buy a bond, you get a coupon, that's your yield, right? And that's how you generate some income. Well, now, as we've seen some major institutional players over the last year, been buying a lot of real estate. And because that's where they're going to get yield. See a lot of private equity firms, a lot of big asset managers buying up a lot of real estate. And so what I think is going to happen is, yes, cap rates are going to rise because they need to. Those two things need to get closer. But I don't think it's going to overcorrect just because there's such a large demand for yield, any type of yield that these institutional players can get. Think about it. When you're playing with that type of money, that big money, like a 5% to 8% return is fine for them. Us, where some of our investors are looking for 10%+, right? 12%+, some even 15%+. So it makes a lot more sense for them. And so they're going to chase that yield. And it's going to keep, in my opinion, the cap rate in a smaller range. But this is not to say that when you're looking at a property that you should not be increasing your cap rate over your hold, because you should. And so that's not to say that you shouldn't be increasing your cap rate when you're underwriting, because you should be. You always should be. I just don't feel like you have some people saying that it's going to be a major correction and it's going to mess. This is what's going to cause a lot of opportunities because your cap rate is going to go from a 5 cap to an 8 cap. I just do not see that happening because there's so much money chasing yield. And right now, real estate's one of the best, if not the best places to get yield still with the rates rising. And that leads me to the second question that I was asked today. Is this a good time to invest? I hear a lot of people saying there's opportunities going to come. Like, how does that happen in this type of market? And when are those opportunities coming? So they were just concerned, like, how are opportunities going to come when interest rates are rising? And the reason for that is because interest rates are rising and so many people bought on short-term debt, which has an adjustable rate factor or a floating factor. So the rate floats. And I may ask, well, why did they do that? A lot of these deals are, like what we do, are called value-add deals, where you're coming in, doing heavy renovations, light to heavy renovations, where you're coming in, putting in $500,000 to $2 million in renovation. And you're doing that because by doing that, you can increase the rents and therefore increases the value of the property, right? Because we all know commercial multifamily is bought on NOI, the net operating income, what it yields every year. That's how it's bought, based on a cap rate, what the market cap rate is. And so you don't always want to buy fixed debt to do that, because usually you have an exit strategy where you want to exit in 3 to 5 years. And the fixed debt generally has higher, they're called yield maintenance or defeasance, which is essentially a prepayment penalty. They have higher prepayment penalty. That's just part of it, right? Pros and cons, right? The pro is you get long-term fixed debt, so your interest rate is going to stay the same over the term. However, if you want to get out, you're going to pay a higher penalty. Generally, they step down as the years go on, versus short-term debt, where you're going to have little to no prepayment penalty, but your interest rate is going to float. And generally, it floats off something called SOFR. It used to be LIBOR. And so this is what's going to create opportunities, because majority of these value-add deals were, over the last 2 to 3 years, were bought with short-term, what we call bridge loans, that float. And so what happens is it floats off SOFR. So as SOFR goes up, usually there's a spread that the loan is, let's call it It's usually 150, 175 basis points. Sometimes it's more, 200 basis points. And there's that spread. So as SOFR goes up, that spread goes with it, right? However, if you don't buy something called a rate cap, that spread can actually increase as SOFR is increasing too. So then your rate goes up even more, like exponentially more, right? Two things I want to hit on here. First is the floating rate aspect. If there was enough reserves that the general partners or the operators raised, or they didn't buy it at an adequate price, the deal, if it was a tight deal, it's going to get even tighter. And it could get even to a point as rates rise where they're literally negative cash flow, where they have to fund the deal to stay alive. And so what that's going to force them to do is sell, because they get to that point, they're not going to be able to refinance because the debt coverage ratio will not be there. And so they're going to have to sell. The other side of that is the rate cap I was talking about. So you can pay for a rate cap where, let's say, they will cap you at 200 basis points spread, meaning your spread's never going to go above, from SOFR to the ceiling, it's never going to go above 200 basis points. You're going to pay for that. 2 to 3 years ago, you wouldn't pay a lot, 50K, 25 to 50K, maybe 100K. Today, you're paying a lot of money for that. I heard someone got quoted at 700,000, 800,000 for, it was a large deal, but still 700,000, 800,000 for that cap. So what's going to happen, even if someone did buy a rate cap, still could see negative cash flow. But if they didn't, there's going to be a great chance you're going to see negative cash flow and they're going to be forced to sell, right? Because not only is your interest rate going up because it's floating off of SOFR, which is increasing, now it's also increasing because the banks are increasing the spread. And you might ask, well, why are they increasing the spread? They're increasing the spread because there's a larger risk and they want to be paid for that risk. And that's going to cause people to have to sell as well. And when you're forced to sell, that's when others can come in, and the buyer now has more leverage. It becomes more of a buyer's market than sellers, especially those that have a lot of dry powder on the sideline. They're capitalized, ready to take a deal down. That's when opportunities come. And a lot of times sellers want to do this quietly because it's obviously their reputation. So it might not even get to the market. It might just be a quick go to a broker. Hey, give me your best five buyers. Let's make a deal. Or it might be, hey, I know another operator that can help me out, and go to them directly. So those are some of the opportunities you're going to see. And also some of these short-term debt, maybe they don't even get to the point where they are negative cash flow, but the term ends, right? So usually you have, on average, you could do like a 2 year plus one, right? And sometimes even another plus one. By that, I mean another years, but generally you're going to get out in 3 years, that term ends. And then to refi, maybe you might not be at a point where you can refi into fixed debt. It's just not there, or refi into another short-term loan. So then you're going to be forced to sell as well. So that's where these opportunities are going to come. And in terms of when this is going to happen, like I mentioned before, I don't have a crystal ball, but as rates rise, we're going to get two more. I'm going to say these opportunities are going to come if at some point, they're going to be spread out through 2023 and 2024. And I think we're going to see again more in 2025, 2026, because people have still been buying on with bridge debt, with short-term debt throughout this year. So I think those are when the opportunities are going to come. And it's about being smart, guys. Don't feel like you have to buy, because the whole FOMO thing, just be smart. It's another conversation I had. I'm going to talk about this on Monday in terms of being smart with your underwriting, how to position yourself. I think it's time to not be so aggressive. Yeah, and that's not going to win you deals in the short term, but it's going to win you some awesome deals in 6 to 12 months. I think it's going to win you some awesome deals. You just got to stick to your guns. There's a lot of people that are just buying. They just feel like they need to get the next one. They need to get the next one, right? That's not always a smart thing to do. Sometimes you got to sit back and wait for it to come to you, and it will. But yeah, guys, I just want to get on here. I had those two questions come up actually a few times this week, and I hope I answered them adequately. But yeah, rates are rising. Rent growth has cooled down. But that doesn't mean it's not a good time to buy. It just means it's a time where you got to be very diligent in your underwriting, and you got to look for the needle in the haystack. That means underwriting more deals, going deeper into those deals, really understanding the market that they're in. Don't make emotional decisions. Really stick to your criteria, stick to those guns. And it's really going to help you in the long run. You know, I was having a conversation with a buddy who's in a different aspect of commercial real estate, not apartments, not multifamily. And he thinks it's crazy. He thinks it's the Wild Wild West out here. People buying cap rates significantly lower than the interest rate they're going to be paying on their debt service. Yeah, I get his perspective. It's wild, wild west out there, right? But it all comes down to the value you can put into the property, your confidence, not only in the market, but your team. And this is a big one. Do not buy on pro forma in regards to, like, buy on pro forma, but do not pay for pro forma. And what I mean by that is, yeah, you see the pro forma and you know the market well enough, you know your team's capabilities, that you can create this or get pretty darn close to pro forma, your projections, right? But don't pay the price what that's going to yield you, right? This, in the last 2 years, this is what's happening, is you're buying a value add deal and the seller was getting part of the profits that you're about to create implementing this value add, right? They were getting paid for the work you're about to do. This is a time, do not do that. Even if you're going to lose a great opportunity, do not do that. It's not worth it. It's going to get you in a lot of trouble. So this is the time to pay the price for what the deal is today. Even if you know you can make it into something amazing in the future, pay the price for what it is today. And that's all I got to say on this one, guys. Hope you got some value out of this. As always, have any questions, reach out to me. Best way to find me is on either LinkedIn, which is at Sean Wins REI, or on LinkedIn, just search Sean Winslow. Love chatting with you guys, answering questions. Yeah, so if you ever have any questions, reach out. And again, thanks for those that have left rating and reviews. Happy to be back at 100. Hopefully it sticks this time. Hopefully there's not some weird thing with the algorithm or Apple Podcasts in general. Hopefully it sticks, but I appreciate you guys. And as always, easy doesn't pay well, and instant gratification is self-destructive. So get out there and not only work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you so you can create the life of your dreams and we can all make this world a better place. All right, everybody, I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.